Hello and welcome to Radio SGN. It's another week here at the SGN offices. I am one of your humble hosts, A.V. Eichenbaum, pronouns they, them. And with me, as per usual, Lindsay Anderson.
Hello, hello.
She, her pronouns. Hello, hello. Lindsay, it has been quite a week in the world of bodily autonomy, and we didn't get to cover all of it this week, unfortunately. It makes me downright furious. We've had to start this over a couple of times because I have gone into fits of rage and need to take a breather. So let's talk about Idaho real quick.
Yeah. So yesterday evening, Idaho signed a new bill very sneakily, kind of late in the evening, under the noses of much of the rest of the world, the liberal agenda, whoever you may fill in the blank with. And this new bill basically claims that if you transport a minor across state lines to seek an abortion without explicit consent by their parents, then you are child trafficking and you can become a felon for that. It's paving the way for states like Idaho to possibly pass similar laws that would affect the trans community, because we're seeing, especially with the bill that we've talked about on this podcast and our writer Benny wrote about, 1469, Washington state is attempting to become a sanctuary state for people, especially in Idaho, that have lost their rights in the last year to bodily autonomy when it comes to abortion access and trans care. So yeah, it's very scary. My mom texted me last night when she read about this and said that she feels like we're headed towards the next civil war. And that's kind of the vibe of everybody that has woken up today to that news.
Exactly. It feels retaliatory. It feels as though the fight just keeps going back and forth. And I, for one, the silver lining, I guess, I am proud that we have 1469 in Washington state. I'm, of course, not a Washingtonian by birth, but I am proud to say that as a member of the Washingtonian community, we can keep fighting for what I believe is right and what I think a lot of people believe is right when it comes to bodily autonomy and when it comes to just owning yourself and who you are. And what does a future like that look like? You know, that's what I keep asking myself. What does it look like when the states have such opposing views on personhood? And I think your mom might be right. I think, hey, Rochelle, shout out Rochelle. Of course, I've been saying that for years. We have a potential civil war on our hands, and we've just been kept too busy and too impoverished to do it. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, it looks like this law is already facing some challengers for the fact that it might violate constitutional rights to interstate travel. So we will see what happens with that. But yeah, if it goes up to like the Supreme Court, we have a very conservative Supreme Court. I could see them upholding this law. And, you know, like we said, paving the way for similar laws that would impact the trans community.
Meanwhile, in the southern states, we had John McDonald writing about this. They are passing laws that ban gender-affirming care for minors as well. It seems like a lot of people are talking about saving kids, protecting kids, and yet everything they do speaks directly to the opposite of that, making sure that children aren't being listened to when they talk about what they need and who they are.
Yeah.
Shoving them down and taking away their authority to know thyself, right?
And I mean, it goes beyond even rights to bodily autonomy, but like the right to life, as we're seeing in Tennessee right now, where the largest student protests since like the 1960s are going on with students in the wake of the most recent school shooting, occupying their state governance buildings and demanding changes to gun laws. This comes especially in the wake of news that guns are the leading cause of death among teenagers and children in the United States, which is just such a dystopian, alarming fact that we just live with on a daily basis. So it's definitely feeling like a crisis of almost generational infighting, because we have young people continuously rising up and saying, this is what we want, this is what we need, this is how we're going to stay safe and happy. And older people just determined to deny that.
13 states so far have passed gender-affirming care bans. That's Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Iowa, Kentucky, Mississippi, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, and West Virginia. Politicians in Kansas, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Texas have all floated bills that would bar the kind of treatment that people need to maintain their mental health and maintain their own identity until 26 years old. With that, we do have kind of a lighter interview coming up. Guys, my kid brother's back in the studio with me, and he's always a hoot. He is a cis straight anthropology student and anthropologist at San Jose State, which is kind of a contentious anthropologist scene right now. We're going to talk all about gender identity and sort of its imposition on the United States, Native Americans, and just kind of people in general, because Western European binaries didn't always dominate society. So you have all that and more to look forward to after the break.
Hi, this is Dr. V. Hill with V. Hill Family Medicine. Ever wish your doctor knew you by name, understood where you were coming from, and listened to your unique health concerns and worries? I have built just such a practice where the focus is on you and the care delivered is in line with your values and ideals. Learn more about affirming primary care at V. Hill Family Medicine. Visit viglmd.com or call 253-693-0071.
Now part of the Seattle Gay News Podcast Network, being yourself loudly illuminates the beautiful and chaotic path of becoming the best version of yourself, even if your brain is a bit chemically imbalanced. Whether you're seeking affirmation that there is more to life than just work, or you're looking for insight on how to live a more intentional life, I am your host, Isabel Mata, and I am here to serve up exactly what you need to hear. Your mental health doesn't define you. It's how you work with it, not against it, that does. Being Yourself Loudly is free to listen to and available wherever you stream your podcasts.
It's the sexiest time of year. This Friday kicks off the Seattle Erotic Art Festival at Seattle Center Exhibition Hall, running April 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. A weekend of titillating art, sensational performances, literary readings, interactive experiences, dance parties, and more. 21 years running, this festival is always a good time. In conjunction with the festival, be sure to check out the second annual Pan Eros Film Festival, featuring erotic films from around the world. Learn more and get your tickets today at seattleerotic.org. Use the discount code SEAFSGN at checkout for 10% off. Joining me today via Zoom is my younger brother, Michael Eichenbaum, who is also on TikTok as The Human Odyssey. He does an anthropology TikTok. He's an anthropology influencer of sorts. Mm-hmm. And he's here today because I asked him to be here, which I really appreciate it. I had some issues with scheduling other ways. And how are you? How's it going?
I'm doing all right, you know, just vibing.
Just vibing. And what I love about your show, I want to call it a show. That's not what it is. What I love about your TikTok channel? What do they call TikTok? Just your TikTok?
TikTok, your TikTok account, your TikTok channel. I like the channel idea, but it's more of just an account. I feel like I'm channeling the energies, though. I'm channeling the historical, anthropological, archaeological energies, but I wouldn't call it channeling.
Calling on the past to educate the masses. What I like about it is that you answer questions people have, sort of like do impromptu research reports based on your comments section. And my favorite, which is, of course, one that I suggested, was about the American Revolution and coffee shops, interconnectedness, the intertwinedness, the caffeinated revolution.
That's right. That was a fun one, man. I appreciate the suggestion because, you know, there's so many hidden histories in our culture that we just don't know about. Like, I mean, when you think about, you have the tea tax that was implemented by the British. Everyone's like, oh, no, we got to switch our fuel, our mental fuel, our daily fuel, you know, both the wealthy and the lower class individuals, they had to come together at these coffee houses. They rubbed shoulders. They discussed, you know, oh, maybe we should, maybe we could start a revolution. We could do that. It's no biggie. You know, we just got to get enough coffee in us and we'll be on our way.
So speaking of hidden histories, I asked you to do what you do best and do a quick research sort of project in the style of your TikTok to shed some light on some non-Western ideas of gender and gender identities. And you've done that. I'm curious as to what you found.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in response to that, on a social and cultural and historical level, it's really, really important to note that European colonialism has been a major force in hurting and erasing and gender variant and gender queer people. And something that's really important, I'm a big language guy. I like the linguistic anthropology subfield. I explore that quite a bit. I'm trying to make more videos about that as well so that I can, you know, really break down how our language is drenched in meanings that are not just necessarily self-assigned, but also assigned by people that have came before us. You know, we stand on the shoulders of giants at all times, you know. We use Western terminology to understand other cultures' ideas about gender and gender variance. And if we use only Western ideas about gender, we might cause more harm and erasure through a sort of gender colonialism. Across the West and elsewhere, the languages and the words we use and how we feel about identity, all of these do change over time, which makes it really evident that the complexity of identity is influenced by terms and terminology. For instance, in Thailand, one of the cultures, the subcultures of Thailand includes the Katoys, also known as ladyboys commonly in English, and they're really, really visible and really accepted in Thai culture, more so than transgender individuals are accepted in a lot of other cultures.
Katoi, that's really interesting.
Absolutely. I mean, originally, it was originally referring to intersex individuals, but it's now kind of an umbrella term for a range of gender expressions, including intersex folks, effeminate gay men, male to female trans folks, and it's a wide-ranging term.
Yeah, what are some other identities that we might find in other cultures that don't conform to the binary as we understand it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, historically, the Hijra people of India have mm-hmm. been undergoing sex change operations because they didn't necessarily, they felt a cultural pressure for their sex organs to align with a gender orientation
mm-hmm.
that was not assigned, that they didn't feel connected to. There's a lot of people in India who are Hijra who, you know, consider themselves third gender as opposed to non-binary, as opposed to, you know, one a male or female. And they still face a pretty high level of persecution and discrimination based on their gender. The Hijra population in South Asia is legally recognized as a third gender group by the Indian government. There are about 6 million Hijras currently living in India. A lot of them in India dress in traditionally feminine clothing. They usually view themselves not as male or female, but as a third gender. You know, a lot of times in the past, before the British colonial invasion of India, the Hijras held a lot of important positions in various administration positions in the Mughal era in India, when there was a lot of Islamic influence from the Persian Empire, which invaded India. You know, from up until the 1800s, they were also considered to hold religious authority and people would seek them out for blessings. When the British invaded and established their colonial rule, they tried to eradicate and criminalize Hijra people with different laws, which eventually were repealed after India gained its independence.
That's wild. I didn't know about that. When we think about historical non-binary folks, often in the United States, we point to the two-spirit gender identity, which I honestly don't know a whole lot about. Did you find anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, a two-spirit person in a lot of Native American cultures is considered to have been blessed with both a male and a female spirit. And both of these spirits combined allow them to experience the world through the eyes of both cisgender groups. Two-spirit people are able to take on either gender identity, regardless of the gender that they were assigned at birth. So male-bodied two-spirits are able to participate in traditional indigenous male activities, and they're also able to take on traditional indigenous female activities. So likewise, female-bodied two-spirits are also able to participate in a wide variety of activities, which may have been traditionally considered as male tasks.
And the thing about cultures that we are not a part of and languages that we do not speak is that the translation and the meaning and the feeling can get lost when we're talking about it as to, you know, garlic bulbs from Gilroy, California, you know, like I just rolled off the garlic truck and now I'm in the Pacific Northwest. And that doesn't mean that I am an authority figure on anything that we're discussing here, just because I'm gender nonconforming myself. I appreciate you doing this for this. Let's talk a little bit about your TikTok persona, your TikTok situation. So you do this, what? How often do you post?
I try to post as much as possible, but really with, you know, school and work and trying to keep up with the Joneses, etc. I don't know who the Joneses are, but, you know, I'm trying
to keep up with them.
I have no idea what that is in reference to. I'm sure there's some classic 70s sitcom. Who knows? But I really want to post more on my second account. I actually have two TikTok accounts.
Oh, God.
One is The Human Odyssey, and the other is La Odisea Humana, which is my account that's entirely in Spanish. So I post videos on my English-speaking account, and then I translate those videos into Spanish and remake the videos in Spanish. And that is really fun. I haven't done as much on that one yet because, you know, it gives me a reason, of course, to practice my Spanish, which is I'm at an intermediate level, and it gives me a reason to practice that. But it also, you know, allows me to do more research more thoroughly on hispanohablante, Spanish-speaking relevant topics. So, for instance, I go on the Tzotzil Maya god of bats named Camosots, which was a really fun one.
So I did see that.
Kind of cool, right? I loved it.
That's really wild. Can you share a little bit about the bat god? Because that fascinates me.
Yeah, I mean, Camosots was a god to the Tzotzil Maya people of the state of what is now known as the state of Chiapas in southern Mexico. Camosots was feared. Camosots was representative of death. And at the time when this myth was beginning, about 1,000 or so years ago, there was a giant vampire bat in the area.
What?
There was a giant vampire bat that lived. It's now extinct, but this is what may have influenced the myth itself of Camosots. So there's some fascinating history that, like, you know, is again like hidden history that we don't really think about a lot because partially it's been lost to time, but also because people just ignore it. You know, we don't really think about what we don't think about, you know.
Is that also a product of colonialism that people don't talk about these things anymore?
Oh, 1,000%. You know, in Mesoamerica specifically and in Central America, you know, and in South America and in Mexico, I mean, you have a ridiculous amount of lost history, lost culture, because not only was it explicitly suppressed by the colonial Spanish and colonial Portuguese, but you have people themselves internalizing the colonial sentiments. And so you have people who don't want to learn their own history because they've been taught not to want to learn their own history. So people don't propagate the stories that, you know, they've been told and taught not to want to propagate. So
and the same is sort of true with the Hijra for a lot of British colonialism. And the same is true for even now we look at American queer identity and what we are and aren't allowed to talk about and how we are and aren't allowed to speak about our own identity. And often it seems to me that when people come in from outside of the community to tell us how we can and can't talk about our community, it's almost like an active form of not colonialism, I guess, when it's American on American, but maybe a little bit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have folks who on every continent, in every time period, you have folks who believe they're the arbiters of a language, who believe they're the arbiters of identity. Oppression is not unique. Oppression is so common. And it happens in greater intensities at some periods and greater and lesser intensities at other periods.
That sucks. That sucks. Oppression is so common when we talk about humanity as a whole and historically.
I do believe that, you know, I say this all the time. I believe it's just as natural to hate and to oppress as it is natural to love and to bring people up. We just tend to focus on the negative, you know? I mean, when we're being fed all these things by social media, such as hatred and all these self-destructive narratives that we consume without really thinking about them, instead of digesting and critically thinking, you get a litany of issues, you know, societally and individually. So you have interpersonal relationships that are suffering because people are not necessarily using language that they agree with. They're just using whatever language is being kind of downloaded into their brain via these devices, which I believe have made us into cyborgs. I believe these phones... These phones make us cyborgs, you know. If like, what is a cyborg, right? You have like, you know, does it have to be melded onto your body?
Sure.
Our phones on us at all times, 100% of the time, pretty much, we become a cyborg. Like, we don't have to have a bionic eye to be a cyborg. Maybe that would help. But if we are constantly using these recording devices, if we're using them as extensions of our brains and our memory, as like our notes app or our, say, audio recordings app, does it not make us a cyborg?
So what you're saying is you believe that since we are connected to the rest of the world by these basically almost cybernetic organs, right? If we look at the phone as a cybernetic window into a whole other thought process and way of being that's constantly attached to our left or right hand, or sort of like propped up on your chin while you're trying not to let it fall on your face while you're scrolling through bread. So what you're saying is because we're always attached to it, we're basically cyborgs at
We're
this
basically
point.
cyborgs.
How does that affect interpersonal relationships, do you think? Because I know that we've talked about this before, but you're like always on your phone, you're always online. And do you feel more or less connected to the world?
My best friends I have right now are both people I only know exclusively in person in the real world, IRL. But I also would say my other best friends that I have are exclusively online people that I have completely been communicating with solely, maybe through voice calls or through texts or video calls or Messenger or Twitter or Facebook. I mean, every possible application. You're right. I'm absolutely terminally online. And so I communicate with people so often online. It's because second nature to me, but I also got Instagram when I was 13. I got Facebook when I was 10. I got a phone when I was, like an iPhone when I was, say, 14, 15. So you have an excessive amount of communication happening where people never turn off their phones. People never, stop getting notifications, push notifications. So our interpersonal relationships are absolutely fraught with distraction, 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 distraction.
And then when you look at it, it's like the way we communicate and the language we use changes. And with it, going back to, I guess, the sort of linguistic anthropology, with it changes our identity and shifts our view of the world, right? So you take the language and you take the way we talk about it, and you take the amount of information, the sheer force of the internet punching into our frontal lobes constantly, and you look at it and you say, well, no wonder we don't understand each other, right? Like, no wonder we have someone so far right or so far left that their head is stuck up their own ass. You know what I mean? Like, we're not going to know what the other person is thinking because even within our own cultures, our subcultures are so splintered and so echo chambered that we can't do anything about it. We're creating cultures faster and faster and faster than our brains can keep up with.
Absolutely, there's hyper specialization, there's extreme, appeals to niche ideas. And I think on the whole, that's a good thing. I'm an optimist, I'm an optometrist, I'm an optimist prime, you know what I mean? But as an optimist prime, we have
Wearing glasses, first of all, does not make you an optometrist, my friend. I try me.
Something that really interesting, I think, is that's relevant is the philosopher Mikhail Bakhtin. He said that a language represents a perspective on the world, and every perspective is characterized by its own values and meanings. You got different voices in your language. You got social dialects, characteristic group behavior. You got jargons. You got, different age gap languages. Different generations speak in different ways.
I mean, Lindsay and I have trouble with that all the time, and we're only like 5 years apart or something.
Absolutely. I mean, different authorities use different languages, right? And you look at the qualities of language, such as perspective and evaluation and one's own ideologies, it makes it clear that most languages are not capable of being neutral because language is part of a larger context. It doesn't exist in a vacuum. So, before we say a word in our own way and with our own intention, it's already drenched with many layers of meaning. And our use of the word has to accommodate those other meanings and even compete with them because, as Bakhtin said, a word will always be dialogic. It is born as one voice in a dialogue that is already in progress, and it is unable to speak monologically, as the only voice in a plane isolated from all social, historical, and ideological and cultural context. So when thinking about how exactly we can communicate with each other, in this society, we have to think about the fact that none of us are original. We're original to an extent, but we're all believing all the time that we're having our own thoughts, but really our thoughts and our words are completely influenced and immersed in a context much wider, much broader than what we imagine.
And I keep coming back to this idea of like how we speak about identity and how the language has evolved around identity and how we talk about like, especially as an, like, from a non-binary person's perspective and from an LGBTQ person's perspective, what I keep thinking is from birth, you know, like, we're told to fit into one or the other box, or, like, you know, straight is supposed to be the heteronormative is the phrase, right? Like, heteronormativity is supposed to be the quote norm, and it just isn't. And so we discover language not only about our identities, but also we relate that language to shame often, and we relate that language to these other cultural contexts that we're undoing right now in a big cultural shift, maybe because of the internet, maybe for other reasons, but there's a big cultural shift and a big difference in the way we talk about queerness and gender identity and all that sort of thing. And and it's just really fascinating to me, because at the same time, we have people living much longer than they used to, people being active online in ways and interacting in ways that they never have before. And we're seeing all of these cultural clashes. Like, there are so many people that I know that are hung up about not just gender identity and queer identity, especially the left, right? We're constantly tribalizing ourselves to focus on these little things, but also on generational identity. Mm-hmm. But, and that's really fascinating to me. Man, we are out of time, bud. But we just got to the good part. Do you have any closing thoughts before we head out?
One thing that I always keep with me is, you know, as we're talking about identity, we are always mediating our own identities and other people's identities through various biases and filters. And I think we have to be conscious of those biases and be conscious of the filters that we're interpreting the world through. You know, the different lenses that we look through, you know, they're going to affect how we see ourselves, and they're going to affect how we see other people. So we have to be, you know, extra conscious about what we're seeing, how we're seeing it, why we're seeing it the way we're seeing it. I think to define ourselves in relation to others,
mm-hmm,
is inevitable. How we think, how we feel, how we behave, it's a continuous process, and we're always growing. We're always growing.
Well, thank you very much for that. You can find them at @the_human_odyssey TikTok. Is it also on Instagram? Not on Instagram. TikTok, yes. Instagram, no. Michael, thank you so much for stepping up and helping me out this week. It's been a rough one, as you know, and I really appreciate you being on the show.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
And we're back. I do really appreciate my brother coming into the studio, because I had a couple of interviews fall through and have to get rescheduled for later dates. We'll see those coming in as the show continues forth. Lindsay, we haven't done a book club in a while. We haven't talked about your books. You do one every week. For those of you who don't know, you can follow SGN_books on Instagram for all of the insightful questions and opinions about the books that Lindsay covers. But if you want to read the full profile and interview that she does every week, you can find it right here in the pages of Seattle Gay News. Let's go for it. What do you got?
Yeah, so I think we've been on a roll so far this spring with books. They just, every one of them blows me away that I've read. This one in particular was by Robert Jones Jr., and it's called The Prophets. It's a historical fiction that Jones wrote literally in the margins of the day. He explained to me he wanted to follow his passion of becoming a writer and telling stories, but as a young Black man, he just didn't think that it was in the cards for him. And so he went back to school as an adult in his 30s to study creative writing. And then he spent a year getting up at 3 a.m. every single day to write for an hour on this novel that he just felt he needed to create. And honestly, his hard work paid off, because this is a masterpiece of a novel. The Prophets is... it's a love story that takes place in slavery in the United States. I mean, it already, when you try to explain it, it sounds very contradictory, right? How can you take the darkest time in American history and make a love story in it? And yet he does it so beautifully. And one thing in my conversation with Jones about this is he did a lot of research into queer history and trans history to try to write a historically accurate love story. And I think that that really goes along with what your brother had to say about anthropology and, you know, the existence of queer and trans identities throughout history. One thing that Jones was very adamant about was, when you look at the past, it's colonization. And European attempts to dominate their culture over other people's that led to the institutionalization of homophobia and transphobia that we're still seeing today, and that a lot of these indigenous cultures really had rich histories where trans people were revered. And his book goes back to that history, and you can see it a little bit in his depictions of same-sex love and community.
Well, that's great. A little bit of hope here, a little bit of, well, love in the dark time, in a terrible time for the United States history, is maybe it's all we've got to hold on to at a certain point. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It really reminds you that, you know, no matter how bad and bleak it feels like this country is, there is love all around us. And it's a good reminder, especially one of the things that Jones talks about in this interview is that so often stories that are told about this time period that center Black people are depressing and they're slave narratives. And I mean, it's true. It was a very depressing time and we need those accurate depictions of what life was like. But when they erase all the joy that also happened, you can't forget that there was still love, because people can't survive without love. And the history of so many marginalized people, especially the LGBTQ community, relies on that love to give us the hope to continue to move forward and try to make changes for the future generations. And I think that that's kind of what you see in this novel is, you know, below it all, there's just a sliver of hope.
Yeah, that's how stories are. Let's talk about love some more. We have a very interesting Ask Izzy this week. It talks all about attachment issues and attachment anxiety. I thought it was kind of sweet, if I'm being honest, but maybe that's just me. Let's see what we got here. Isabel Mata, of course, the host of the Being Yourself Loudly podcast, and she was recently on a Hot Topics panel for PNW Today, which is a morning talk show here in Seattle. You can check out the clip. It's real fun to watch. The question asker says, "Dear Izzy, my partner and I pretty much U-hauled during the pandemic and have not spent more than a few days apart from each other. I love them so much, but I'm going to be traveling soon and I can't bear the thought of leaving them. How can I make the separation feel easier when we are apart without seeming too clingy?" And that's from Attached and Anxious. Not to put you on the spot here, Lindsay, but that seems pretty relatable to your situation.
Very
you
relatable.
And your partner, also named Isabel, different Isabel, have been nigh inseparable. Moving in together during the pandemic must have been really tough. I was alone during the pandemic for the most part, so I can't really relate to that. So I have to say something here. There is a sentence here that I don't think is good advice from Izzy, and we have our opinions on the show. She says that the idea that a person can be too clingy is nothing more than pop culture slang, and I vehemently disagree with that. As someone who, I struggled with attachment issues when I was kind of getting into my own relationships and stuff. So when I first left home, I have not always been loved well or treated kindly in my relationships. And that anxiety that one feels when they're away from their partner is natural and normal, but it's also, for me, it was a deep discomfort with myself and having to be with myself alone. And I've gotten a lot better at that, and I'm still struggling with that every day. I disagree with Isabel's assessment here that no one can be too clingy, because I think that I have been too clingy in previous relationships, or I've tried to be not, quote, too clingy and ended up, like, fucking everything up, you know? So take that as you're going to take it. I know I'm not the advice columnist here. That's my take.
Yeah. I love some of Izzy's steps that she lists at the end of this article. Things like bringing items with you that maybe will remind you of your partner, or leaving love letters around the house for them to find. I think that's cute and definitely not too clingy, but I do agree with you too that sometimes people can be clingy in an unhealthy way that hopefully by the time you get, you know, to be 3 years in a relationship, it's not with somebody that's stuck to you in an unhealthy manner.
Yeah, codependency is not I think, an option for a lot of people. You know what I mean? Codependency mm-hmm. can create toxic relationships that last for far too long, and it can be very damaging all the way throughout as well. So I do think that her little steps are cute. Like getting a little item of clothing or like a hoodie or something from someone you care about is very sweet and very nice. But there is such a thing as too clingy.
I love that. And who doesn't love wearing like a hoodie of your partner's? You know, isn't that like the sweetest thing?
Yeah, I'm always like at least a foot taller. if not a few inches, then at least a foot taller than the people I date. Just that's how it's kind of turned out, but.
You could rock the Ross look from Friends, you know, the tiny t-shirt.
I mean, I rock a crop top. I'm not going to say that I don't, but it's not exactly the same for me, I think. You know, one of the sweetest things that someone I was dating ever did was for Valentine's Day, they cut up a bunch of Valentine, like, meme cards, like, just joke Valentines, and they put them as, like, puzzle pieces, and they put them in tea bags. Like, they attach little envelopes to these tea bags. Each time I opened it up, I got a new piece of one of the Valentines. So every time I had a cup of tea, because I drink a lot of tea, I got a little bit more of a... It was a longer distance relationship, so I got a little bit more of each Valentine as the months went on, and it was very sweet.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. That was like, well over a decade ago, but it was sweet. And I think that things like that can keep anxiously attached person at ease.
Yeah.
Because I know it did for me. So I agree with Isabel there that little thoughts, even just like a text or something during the day, is helpful.
Yeah, I think that's really sweet. I was going to say, I love how Izzy also brings up attachment styles and how important it is to know your attachment style and communicate that with your partner. It's something I talk with my therapist about a lot. As a personally someone with an anxious attachment style, it comes in handy to kind of have that vernacular in your tool belt.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there you go. You got a couple of different views on what it's like to be an anxious queer person in the 21st century. Folks at home, I hope that helped you out a little bit if you're going through something similar. Another thing that I found helps a lot, if you don't always feel supported or like if you get anxious about trusting your partner for whatever reason, having your own friend group and not having all of the same friends really does help. Building community. That's what we're all about today on Radio SGN. Hey, look, things are really bleak right now. Can we just take a second to appreciate Ots Bolise?
Yeah, this comic this week actually was so cute. I loved it. It was like the pastels, the cottagecore, the frog. I was really into it.
Folks, if you're an audio-only fan of the SGN, you are missing out on some great comic work with Chickenhead, which is a very fun, very quirky comic that Ots gives us every week. I don't know if it's completely updated on the website yet. I try to do that as often as possible, but sometimes I get really busy. That doesn't mean it's not a priority. You can also find some of the more recent comics on our Instagram and in the pages of the SGN. This week's comic was very sweet and very cute, especially since we just ended the Thirsty Daddy arc, which is always fun. But I gotta have Ots on the show sometime. I'd love to talk more with him. He's very funny and a genuinely very sweet person, and it comes through in his art.
Yeah, I also want to know what his creative process is. Like, how do you come up with a chicken swiping on Grindr and Instagram to a bunch of thirsty daddy pics?
Okay, so there are comics up in here that say, hey, this is me, the comic person. I think that Chickenhead's a little bit of a self-insert for Ots, and that makes it even sweeter and, like, kind of nice. Because there are some really bizarre, surreal moments to this. My favorite arc, I think, was when they went to, like, lube wrestling night. And then they had this, like, weird lube wrestling moment. And they meet Baby Man. I stan Baby Man. Baby Man is a pink tiger who wears, like, a leotard and wrestles and is like a minor celebrity in the world of Chickenhead. It's so great because every time Baby Man comes into the picture, not only does he dress fantastically, he's very conscientious about certain things. Ots manages to blend political activism and like cute, quirky humor. I'm glad that we lucked out when we were looking for a comics artist last year. Any other stories you wanted to cover today, Lindsay?
I don't know, just I guess a shout out to everybody that showed up to Trans Day of Visibility, and especially the performers, because they were crazy talented. I was introduced to the punk band Gender Envy, and I'm obsessed with them now. They are amazing. I stalked their Instagram page. They're based out of like UW, just kind of a bunch of students that got together to write music about being trans and non-binary, which is awesome. And the drag performances were crazy. And I think my favorite thing, more than seeing the drag performances, was seeing the kids react to the drag performances, because these kids were like losing their minds. They were so excited. Like the smallest thing, like a drag performer would like flip off a politician, and these kids were like screaming and jumping and fist bumping. And yeah, it was great.
It's nice to see that we can still unite joyfully and in a political sense, but still in a very real sense, have a good time, you know? I think that is something that is unique, or if not unique, that is very special about the LGBTQ community, in that in times of hardship, what we turn to is comedy and partying and humor in a way. And sometimes it's too much. Again, I don't go out much. But there is a very unique sense of humor that stems from, you know, being hunted by politicians consistently and constantly throughout our entire existence, and being the scapegoat for, you know, whatever boogeyman leftist agenda some weirdo politician has decided we are the scapegoat for now, you know? So it's nice to know that a bunch of kids got to fist bump about a drag queen. That's a very Seattle sentence, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, it's surreal to me as someone that grew up in a more conservative region of the state too, to just be like, oh my gosh, these kids are here. And they're, a lot of them were there with their parents, who were very supportive. And, you know, even the ones that weren't there with their parents, I'm still like, dang, you have a friend group, you have people that like validate you and your identities and celebrate you. And that's just amazing. You know, as awful as the rest of the country and the world feels right now, and as much as it feels like we're taking steps backwards, sometimes just like seeing the joy on the faces of queer kids, it feels like a major step forward, especially if you were a person that maybe didn't get to be authentically yourself as a kid.
Yeah, that's nice. It's nice to see. In sort of good news, not quite great news, but it is sort of good news. This is an international highlight from Dan, shout out. Hello. Thank you, Dan Lindsley, who is editing the show today. Companies warn Uganda that discrimination hurts profits, which is a weird roundabout way of getting people to be like more chill. You know what I mean? Being like, hey, it's going to hurt your wallet if you're homophobic. Huh? Which is true.
Honestly, it's a great way to get things done.
Yeah, I don't know why we're not trying to do that more at home. I mean, I guess we do that with pride, but yeah, weird. On Wednesday last week, Microsoft and Google joined a coalition of international companies in denouncing Uganda's recent bill calling for harsher persecution of LGBTQ people, is what it says here. The companies warned that such laws would harm the East African country's economy by lowering investment, deterring tourists, and throwing a wrench in recruitment efforts. And that's wild to me, that these American companies are going in and being like, hey guys, it's worse here. And it is for a lot of people. America has at least some rights, like we're not killed anymore, you know, by the government in droves. We might get there again at some point, we'll see. But right now, at least we have that freedom. I'm not going to be walking down the street someday and just get shot randomly. Oh, wait, sorry. No, that's wrong, too. That could also happen because our gun laws are not common sense in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Speaking of, weird thing, I forgot that as a joke, I signed up for Garden and Gun magazine quarterly. And that came today, oh, no. And it punched me in the fucking gut. But Garden and Gun is a very interesting and very solid piece of journalism. It's just, it's a very specific, very southern magazine. I love gardening, and it's got some great recipes. And honestly, the interviews are really solid too. But it's called Garden and Gun.
So how do they combine gardens and guns? Are you like shooting the soil?
Well, actually, okay, so this is actually really interesting because there was a while back a prototype built for shotgun shells that you can fill with seeds and scattershot wildflower seeds that way.
That's cute. But you could also do that with like a pepper shaker.
It's a lot easier to do it with a pepper shaker, but it doesn't go boom. And I think that was kind of the draw there. It's like a lot easier for like guerrilla gardening if you just use a pepper shaker. Guys, it's spring. Go out there, plant some wildflowers. We need it. Save the bees. Not so much the honeybees, but like the native bees that are in the area. So plant native flowers. You know what I mean?
Well, but honeybees are so cute. Are we not saving them anymore?
Well, no. So honeybees are cute. They're great. But the problem with them is European honeybees are technically an invasive species.
Oh, man.
Yeah, like it's a bummer.
From Europe.
Look at us, huh? Honeybees, European honeybees, are good pollinators, and they work with the environment better than a lot of invasive species. However, native bees that don't produce honey have not been prioritized for the last few hundred years because they don't produce honey. And so it's become really hard for them to find pollen and trees and things that they can actually consume. And so we're actually killing the bees that are the most helpful for our environment by not planting native wildflowers. And yeah, and so it's...
Oh, man. Plant the wildflowers, huh? Then.
Yes, we do.
So we need to plant the wildflowers
luckily
then to save the
for
bees.
Us, I guess, the wildflowers on the West Coast are pretty similar. So, like, I can plant wildflowers that I've kept around since I moved up here, and they're not going to be, like, completely devastating to the environment. However, you can look up exactly what kind of Pacific Northwest wildflowers you should be planting. It's a little past planting season, if I'm being completely honest, but, you know, there's no time like the present for a late bloomer. Yeah, but honestly, I do really enjoy Garden and Gun. I just hate that it's called Garden and Gun. This is the Southern Rock Revival special issue of Garden and Gun.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's got a true crime element to it for a wild Alabama kidnapping. It's got Jason Isbell, who's the South's next wave of must-hear guitar greats. And a lot of great music has come out of the South, not the least due to the influence of Texas blues, Mississippi blues. Just blues in general. Blues and rock and roll really started there, and it's taken on a life of its own, and that's really great to see. We've got
Kelsey Ballerini's from the South, stream her music too.
You're going to have to go over that one more time for me, because we talked about that before recording, and the CMAs happened.
Yeah, and Kelsey Ballerini hosted, and she diverted away from something that a lot of country music stars don't do, and she actually talked about politics. She brought up the need for common sense gun reform, and then in her performance, she had a bunch of drag queens sing backup and dance backup for her, and so now country music fans are trying to cancel her and ruin her career because they're angry that she had drag queens in her performance and talked about gun control. So stream
Look,
her
man,
music.
Yeah, real country fans know that it's all about taking down the man and fighting the power where it needs to be fought. Pop country for the last X amount of years has just been real trash. You know what I mean? And it sucks that that's the case.
I could talk for a whole episode about country music. I watched a documentary about it recently, but I won't get into it because we got to wrap up.
Yeah, well, maybe we can talk about that after I've read Garden and Gun cover to cover. And we can get back into it and see what it's like down there. Well, folks, it's been an interesting episode. It's been a rough, rough week. But we're still here. We're still fighting. Is there anything you'd like to say before we head out, Lindsay?
Just take care of yourselves and take care of each other. Check in on your friends. It's a difficult time. And, you know, nobody is handling it any better than anybody else. So just check on each other.
Yeah, find strength in your community. And we hope that we can be a little bit of that community right here on Radio SGN and with the SGN. You can follow Seattle Gay News at Seattle Gay News on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. You can find the podcast at radio.sgn on Instagram. We're a little bit more active on Twitter. I keep saying that, and we've been really boosting those Twitter numbers, I guess. And you can find that at Seattle Gay News as well. Go ahead and check us out at sgn.org. If you have a couple of dollars that you'd like to pass our way, we really could use it to keep the paper going. We do have advertising, but really it's support from the community and listeners like you that keeps us going. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you in the funny pages. Radio SGN is hosted by A.V. Eichenbaum and Lindsay Anderson, and produced by A.V. Eichenbaum. Music for this show was provided by T.R.G. Banks and Jesse Spillane, or was provided for free by Anchor. Thank you so much for listening. Check us out on sgn.org or wherever you find podcasts. This podcast is part of the Seattle Gay News Podcasting Network.